Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY. In her recent State of the State address to the state of Michigan, our Governor Gretchen Whitmer made some interesting claims. We thought we'd check them out with the economist in our state who we revere. His name is Dr. Timothy Nash. He is Senior Vice President Emeritus and Director of the McNair Center for the Advancement of Free Enterprise and Entrepreneurship out of Northwood University. Dr. Nash, welcome to the Lucy Ann Lantz Show here on 1290 WLBY. Great to have you back with us. And I'm
Lucy Ann, it's great to be with you.
Thank you so much. All right, here was the quote that struck me that our governor said during her State of the State. She said, "I cannot solve global inflation alone. No one person can, not even the president. If you meet someone who says they have a secret plan to fix inflation, run." What do you say to that, Dr. Nash?
Well, I think there's some truth to what the governor says, but I would disagree with her in most areas, meaning that if you look at inflation, my old mentor and Nobel Prize winning economist Milton Friedman, you know, made the statement many times that inflation is a monetary phenomenon. And so when you look at rising prices, yes, to the governor's point, some of our higher prices in the last couple of years have been due to supply chain interruptions based on COVID or based on what was happening in terms of conflict in Ukraine. But if you look, Lucy Ann, at the major cause of inflation in the United States and globally was excessive government spending and then monetizing the debt, meaning increasing the money supply. So if you look at it, there's very strong increases in government spending, very strong increases in the money supply, and that led to higher inflation.
Explain how that happens, Dr. Nash. Explain, you know, what the mechanism is for that. When government increases these kinds of things, how does that impact inflation exactly?
Well, yeah, if you look at basic economics, if you had $10 and 10 items in your economy, the average price of each item would be $1, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you used a dollar to purchase the goods and or services in your economy, if you increase the money supply and there's no more production in productivity, so let's say that you increase the money supply from $10 to $15, the average price would go from $1 to $1.50. And the thing that's important to note to your listeners is that there are three ways to finance government. You tax, you borrow, and or you inflate. And so if you look at inflation and look at some of the terrible examples of inflation in the history of the world, probably the worst example in the last 100 years was the collapse of the Weimar Republic in Germany, which brought Adolf Hitler to power. And what happened was between World War I and World War II, the Germans were paying off restitution for all the damages they did across largely Europe during World War I, and they taxed their economy to death. Their national debt was at record highs. Gee, interesting parallel for us today. And so the only way that they were able to, fund things was they dramatically increased the money supply, and prices went through the roof. I remember teaching out of a monetary theory book by professors Miller and Pusinelli, and they talked about the German hyperinflation, and they showed this little old lady with a wheelbarrow full of German Deutschmarks, and she was going right down Main Street in Munich. And nobody was accosting her. Nobody was taking her money. And she got to this grocery store, went inside, came back out, and in the wheelbarrow for all that money was one loaf of bread. That's how high prices had gone.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's a simple example, but to say that the government was not responsible for the inflation is just not true.
So,
and if you look at what inflation was like when President Biden became president, and you look at it today, there's a dramatic increase. And the only key common corollary was dramatic increases in government spending and the money supply.
So is it possible, Dr. Nash, that one state could affect that by lowering taxes? If they had a grand plan to lower taxes here in Michigan, would that help inflation in our state?
Well, you know, states can, I think the governor's correct that for the most part, inflation is a monetary phenomenon, and therefore it has to do with government spending at the federal level and monetary policy, which is the domain of the Treasury and the Federal Reserve. A state can make things a lot less expensive by cutting taxes. You know, as an example, what is happening with the gasoline? It's one of the highest priced items. And if you look at what happened to prices from the time that President Biden was elected in January of 2021 to date, prices are up, Louisiana, 20%. And one of the largest items is gasoline. Gasoline was about $2.40, $2.35 a gallon when President Biden came into office. And it's still averages across the country over about $3 a gallon. So it's not as high as it was middle of last year, but there's still a dramatic increase in the price of gasoline. What's one of the reasons why gasoline is high priced? The gasoline tax. If you cut the gasoline tax, you would cut the price of buying a gallon of gasoline, and that's something most Michiganders depend on. If you cut regulation and made it easier to do business, and companies could cut their cost of doing business in a competitive market, they would lower their prices if they were able to with less regulation, and that would help to reduce prices. It's not the core cause of inflation, but it certainly would help ease prices in a state like Michigan.
Well, and I guess to the governor's point that no one person can solve inflation, not even the president, I suppose she's correct. You need Congress as well, correct?
Yes, you do. And also, what's important is it's really the domain of the Federal Reserve. So you need, today our Federal Reserve is meeting in Washington, D.C. and debating monetary policy. And so it depends on what all the governors that are on the Open Market Committee of the Federal Reserve decide to do. And what certainly has happened is when President Biden and Secretary of the Treasury Yellen said, we shouldn't worry about inflation, inflation's transitory, in April and May and June of 2021, the history has certainly proven them to be wrong. And so it's really important that we get government spending under control and that the Federal Reserve feels comfortable with an inflation-free economy. And right now, even with where we're at, inflation is still about, it's not where it was when the president took office. And for 2023, it averaged 3.4%. And what's important is a lot of people are trying to say, well, look, inflation's down dramatically. No, the rate of increase is down. But prices in 2023 were 3.4% higher than they were the previous year. And as I said before, overall prices are about 20% higher for consumers across the board. You think about it, look at the home mortgage interest rate, dramatically higher today than it was in 2021. To finance an automobile is a lot more expensive. So many things are higher. Credit card interest rates, all because of inflation.
We're talking with Dr. Timothy Nash, Senior Vice President Emeritus at Northwood University. He's the director of the McNair Center for the Advancement of Free Enterprise and Entrepreneurship. He's a frequent guest here on our show. You're listening to Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY. Let's talk about the GDP, the gross domestic product. What is that? How does that play into us here in the state of Michigan?
Oh, gross domestic product is the measure of the, in essence, the production of goods, services, and assets in a state and in a country. You know, the United States represents about 4% of the world's population, and we produce almost 26% of the world's GDP. So the United States is, you know, truly one of the great economies in the history of the world today, and is by far the largest, most powerful economy in the world as we look at it from a gross domestic product perspective. Michigan has been, again, one of the great stories in the history of the United States, especially over the last 100 years. We brought the world the mechanization of the automobile. We brought the world a lot of other byproducts of the automobile. Literally, Detroit and Michigan was the arsenal of democracy. We took the great factories of the United States and produced tanks and planes and armaments to turn the tide and win World War II. And on top of our industrial base, we have a strong intellectual capital base, because we have some great colleges and universities in the state of Michigan. And then what a lot of people don't realize is Michigan has one of the largest, most diverse agricultural industries. And so these are the kinds of things that make up Michigan GDP, and it's one of the 10 most populous states in the country, and it has one of the 14 highest gross domestic products in the country. If Michigan, Lucianne, were a free and independent country, it'd be about the 30th largest economy in the world.
Hmm.
That's how big the Michigan economy is relative to the rest of the world.
Dr. Nash, let's talk about the national debt. You had a piece in townhall.com recently, along with some of your colleagues, talking about this. And I was struck by this statement. You write, "What is most alarming is the United States took 205 years from 1776 to record a total national debt of $1 trillion and an additional 29 years to grow the national debt to just over $13 trillion in 2010. Recently, in less than 14 years, our national debt grew from $13 trillion to $34 trillion with three quarters of the current fiscal year yet to be recorded." How high can that go?
Well, that is something that's very troubling for me as a father of four and grandfather of 12. It's just alarming, because when you look at it, in addition, we point out in the article, Lucianne, that interest on the national debt used to be in the top 30 items. Today, it's getting ready to move from the number four item to surpassing national defense to being the number three item in the federal budget. Just interest, no principal. This year, we estimated at the McNair Center that the federal government, when this fiscal year is over, now that's 8 months from now, because that article was published about a month ago, we will have a interest on the national debt burden of $1.19 trillion. And it's getting out of control. We used to spend about 20% of U.S. GDP on the federal budget. Because of COVID, it increased dramatically to try to avoid a great economic downturn. COVID's been over. The COVID crisis has been over for at least two, I would say 3 years. And we haven't cut government spending. Federal government spending, in my opinion, is out of control in Washington. And I hate to say this, Lucy, both parties have been very irresponsible. President Trump can argue that a chunk of his $8 trillion in national debt was due to COVID. President Biden didn't need to spend a dime on COVID. If you look at GDP, the 4 years, the four quarters of President Biden's first year in office, it was among the best 1 year periods, four back-to-back-to-back-to-back quarters of GDP growth in modern American history. There wasn't a need to spend the kind of government money he spent in 2021, and certainly in 2022. And 2023, we need to bring fiscal sanity back to the U.S. economy, or we are going to have a very difficult time managing this debt going in the future.
Incredible.
And you might even have Yeah, you might even have your listeners note that I believe it's 2023. It might be 2034. But if something is not done to figure out what we're going to do with the shortfall in revenue for Social Security, the federal government will have to cut everybody's Social Security check by something like 17%. So we're either going to have to dramatically increase the retirement age, raise taxes, or hopefully what we do is we grow the economy to such a degree that we bring in a lot more money that will offset the shortfall predicted for Social Security revenue.
All right. When we start talking about that, you often hear people saying, let's just tax the wealthy at a higher rate, especially when it comes to Social Security taxes. Talk about why that's not the answer.
Well, I think that I've been waiting. It's funny you bring that up because I had a call the other day with the National Taxpayers Union Foundation, and they, along with the Tax Foundation, do great work in taking the IRS data, the most available IRS data that's been, you know, finally edited and audited, and the IRS then releases the data. So last January, the IRS released data the previous November, and the Tax Foundation and the National Taxpayers Union took the 2020 data and gave us a real interesting analysis. November of 2023, we were supposed to, if we're the Tax Foundation, the National Taxpayers Union, the IRS was supposed to release all the data for taxes in 2021, but they didn't release it, and they still haven't released it. So I can't give you 2021 data. I'll have to give you 2020 data. And here's the problem with taxing the rich. In 2020, based on both the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS data and the National Taxpayers Union analysis of IRS tax data, the top 1% of Americans earned about 25% of all income but paid 42% of all income taxes. So this argument that the rich don't pay taxes is just not true. And the flip side is that the bottom 50% of all taxpayers in America, and there was almost 160 tax returns filed in 2020, 160 million tax returns filed, the bottom 50% paid about 2.5% of all income taxes in 2020. So, the wealthy pay taxes, and what happens is that when you raise taxes, the wealthy either put their money overseas or they just say, I've got enough money. I'm not going to work that hard if I've got to pay this much in taxes. And what you find out if you look at these studies over 20 years, Lucianne, is that the lower the tax rate, the more the wealthy pay in taxes, the harder they work, the more companies they create. And so the correlation is raise taxes on the rich, the federal government gets less money, not more.
That is incredible. Absolutely stunning statistics there. And so the answer here altogether is lowering taxes and less regulation, right?
Absolutely. I'm a big believer. I think that if you look at the most productive states, the states that have experienced the greatest growth, the greatest population increase, the states that have realized the most new members of the House and Senate, based on every 10 years census of Bureau study, are all the states that have or among the lowest as it relates to overall tax burden and overall regulatory burden. The states that are growing, creating new jobs, where people want to go and live and retire, are not states like California and New York and New Jersey and Illinois. They're states like Texas and Tennessee in Florida, and in the, again, Utah, the states that have very low taxes and very low regulatory environments.
Dr. Nash, does it drive you crazy when you see politicians, especially presidents and others who are in control of these kinds of things, governors, does it drive you crazy when you hear them talking about economic issues and they don't seem to have a grounding in them of what is really going on here? Or do they know, and this is more about control?
Well, I really believe that in many cases, Lucianne, politicians end up being a lot more about what they perceive to be equality or fairness. And they don't think about what's going to happen if their policies are implemented. But I would simply say to you that if you look at examples of massive government programs, it's very difficult to find examples where government subsidies have driven or government-created industries have led to economic prosperity in both this country or in other countries. If you look at countries like Sweden, a number of the Scandinavian countries, or even Great Britain, after World War II, the British nationalized most of their industry, the automobile industry, the banking industry, the steel industry. And it took a great prime minister like Margaret Thatcher to sell those off. And economic growth since the Thatcher era, where a lot of these government-owned industries had been sold off, has been among the best in the post-World War II history of Great Britain. If you look at Sweden, Sweden has become an economically robust country by cutting a lot of taxes and regulations. And one of the big taxes they cut were, taxes on inheritance, and dramatically cut their income tax. So I do not know of countries that have large government subsidies and increase in the size and scope of government, and you see economic prosperity. And if you want to talk, and some of your listeners may call and say, well, Nash is wrong. What about China? Well, I've been to China, and I've been to the old Soviet Union, and I was there before the collapse of communism. And yes, they are still under a communist political system, but I can tell you the economy of the Soviet Union doesn't exist, and Russia today is much freer and much more competitive, and that's why they have had the prosperity they've had. And if they continued toward economic freedom, they would be even more prosperous. And if you look at China, I remember getting off the plane from Hong Kong into Beijing with my dear friend Larry Reed, who founded the Mackinac Center. And I remember being greeted by guards in big Mao coats with submachine guns. Now, China is not a free economy like the United States today, but it is dramatically more free than it was when we were there in the early late 1980s. We were there in 1989, early in 1989, before Tiananmen Square in the summer and before the collapse of the Berlin Wall and in later 1989. And I would simply say to you, if China had continued its movement toward more of a Hong Kong-style government, China would be the largest economy in the world today, and the world would be a freer and much better place than it is.
Even if you don't understand economics, all you have to do is be a student of history. Dr. Timothy Nash, thank you so much for setting the scene for us, and hopefully we'll have a prosperous 2024, but it really depends on where we go with these regulations and taxes, and we'll see. Dr. Timothy Nash is the director of the McNair Center for the Advancement of Free Enterprise and Entrepreneurship out of Northwood University. He's also Senior Vice President Emeritus there. Thank you, sir. Always great talking with you.
Lucianne, thank you very much. It's an honor to be on your show, and keep up the great work. As you know, my mom and dad both passed away, but they spent the latter third of their life in Ann Arbor, and we're big fans of your show.
Oh, thank you. That makes me very happy. And you're listening to Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY.